Ron Ananian.
Taking the belt off and having the noise change doesn't make me start thinking about timing chain.
The Car Doctor.
You want to hear a noise when a flex plate lets loose? Holy cow. It sounds like, like an explosion occurred underneath.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Join me, Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, this hour at 855-560-9900. More information at cardoctorshow.com. Obviously, we make podcasting available for you. Tune in iHeart, iTunes, all the good places. And you can subscribe there, and we appreciate it when you subscribe. It does help our cause. And naturally, if you need me during the week, it's ron@cardoctorshow.com. But most importantly now, this radio show is live on the air Saturdays 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the network. Get out to 855-560-9900. Again, 855-560-9900. Give us a call. Let's talk about your car and its problem. And if you happen to get this show by aforementioned podcast, or you can actually stream it also from cardoctorshow.com. But if you're listening to it by podcast and you call 855-560-9900, we're not on the air, leave a message. There's an answering service. You can leave a message and our producer will call you back and put you in the lineup for the following week and talk to you up here about cars. And I'll make it easy, honest. I'll be gentle. And we'll educate everybody and talk about and solve your problem for you, because that's what this radio show is all about. Quick couple of pieces of information before we kick open the doors. A couple of weeks ago, we had a gentleman call up with a 55 or 56 DeSoto, I think it was, that had a generator issue, not charging. Gotten a lot of email about that. Everyone wanted to know what the outcome of that was. And the outcome was that remember he said he had the generator rebuilt? When he had it rebuilt, the rebuilder put two same size or incorrect size studs for the field in the armature terminal post on the generator. So the wires at the generator were reversed, and it blew up the regulator in the car. But that was the end result of that. And that's why every time you take the generator out, took it down to the rebuilder tested it, it charged, put it back in the car, it wouldn't charge, it wasn't wired correctly, but more importantly, it was a result of the rebuild. The rebuilder didn't rebuild it correctly and because they put two different size posts on there, so you kind of can't interchange it. Well, somehow they managed to interchange it, and nobody noticed it, that the posts were a different size, the wrong size. They used two smaller posts, I believe it was, and naturally, smaller fits into larger, and it worked. So that was the end result of that. But anyway, I just wanted to get that out there, and I appreciate all the inquiries. Let's kick the garage doors open. Let's go over and talk to Tim in Flint, Michigan, and some comments and questions about tires. Tim, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hello. Good to talk to you, Ron. I talked a couple weeks ago about a brake light switch on this 08 Silverado. Long story short, I went to O'Reilly's, got one. It worked better than the dealer.
Perfect. Good. Yeah, I remember this. The brake lights were coming on by themselves, right?
Right. Yeah. They're sticking on, and I got a dealership item, and opposite, they weren't coming on. So, okay, I'm going to risk the aftermarket when I get O'Reilly's. Actually, lifetime warranty and for pennies, and put it on there, no problem.
And you see, and that's the thing you have to love about O'Reilly Auto Parts, in that, they're one of the few. They've got good people behind the counter. They know what's going on. And they're able to offer programs, and they know what parts work. It's just really amazing. We had an AC Delco ignition switch about a year ago that replaced it because of sloppiness in the tumblers, and it never really worked quite right. In my mind, I'm going, well, it's got to be a good part. It's a Delco. And a couple of weeks later, swapped it out, put another one in, and did the exact same thing. Went out and got an aftermarket piece. Problem solved. Car's fixed. You start to wonder sometimes when the OEs can't make it right, you start to worry about how's the aftermarket going to do it, and yet they do. Voila, you're the proof of it. So I'm glad it worked out for you, Tim. What can I do for you today?
Like you said, maybe the aftermarket's paying attention a little more.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. And I'll tell you what, they have to. We get a lot of phone calls talking about the future and where's the future of this industry going to be and when will the change come, and it's all tied to economics. But let me tell you, if the aftermarket auto industry disappears, you don't have to worry about World War III. It's over. There'll be no country left, because people don't realize how deep and how involved the auto industry is in the economics of this country. So just a big deal. Hang on a second, Tim. Let me say hi to Mom. Hi, Mom.
Okay.
Mom's walking past the studio window. She's waving hi to everybody. She doesn't understand. Yeah, Ma, you have to talk. Radio is, sound on radio is important. Yeah, she's waving hello. Anyway, let's I got a visitor.
Yeah, you gotta take care of Mom.
I got a visitor in studio today, Tim. What can
sure.
I tell you? So what can I do for you, sir? What else we want to
all
go
right,
over?
On the same truck, oh wait, Silverado, 1500 four wheel drive. When I bought it, had good tires on it, Cooper Discover. And, you know, they're fine, they're safe. I checked them out, and I haul a camper. It was a little travel trailer, about 5,500 pounds. So I put some airbags on the back, and everything does perfect. I'm very happy with everything, but...
I knew there was a but here. Go ahead.
But, all right. So when I'm walking through the dealer when I'm buying this Switch, I'm looking at these trucks with a 9,000-pound tow rating, basically a 1,500 V8, basically the same thing I got. And I thought, 9,000 pounds, wow. And I looked down at the tire, and it's a passenger tire. Now, I'm old school. I'm 50 years old. I'm old school. I was grazed up with the extra low tire and the E-load range. You got to have this. You got to have this to haul and pull and all that. And the salesman walked by, and I said, do you know, these trucks have passenger tires on them? He said, yeah. I said, well, they got a 9,000-pound tow rating. How does that work together? He goes, you don't need the extra low tires anymore. Them passenger ones are fine. Is that? I mean, I know you're not a tire shop, but
so they're rewriting the laws of physics,
right? I don't get it.
So in their universe, time travel does happen, and and Back to the Future is really just a family vacation to them. No,
sure.
You know, it's the laws don't change. All right, you know, it's in the sense that yeah, I'm an extra load guy, I'm a load rangey guy, and there's nothing worse than somebody on the side of the road with a trailer with a tire failure because the tire was improper for the vehicle. You know, one of the things I don't understand is I want somebody to give me a clear rating of gross vehicle weight rating, GVWR, all right? Because I look at this and I tried reading the stat. You know, down here in Bergen County, New Jersey, the county cops always have the landscapers pulled over on the side of the road. And it's because the registration says it's rated for this much weight, but the truck can only carry that much weight, and the tires that are on the truck are somewhere between the two. And nobody can give me a clear explanation of, you know, you're telling me so, you know, a truck that's registered 14,000-pound GVW, all right, you're telling me, my understanding is the weight of the truck plus the load is good up to 14,000 pounds.
Right.
And then some people say, well, no, it's the weight of the truck fully loaded plus the towing capacity of the trailer that you attach to it.
Describe fully loaded.
Right. Describe fully loaded. Is it?
You got two 300-pound guys in there. That makes a difference.
Well, do you have two 300-pound guys in there? And then is the bed filled with, you know, sacks of marbles, or is the bed filled with sacks of pillows? What's fully loaded? And
exactly.
Listen, I think you're right. I think the guy in the dealership is incorrect. I think that, you know, until I see it in writing, one of the smartest things I've heard this year, and it's smartest things I've heard in a long time, I give credit to Pierre Raspeau. We were over at the Technician Service Training Seminar 2 weeks ago, broadcasting live, and I loved what Pierre said at the end. I said, what does it take to be a technician today? What would you tell the youngsters up and coming? And I've applied that in my own thought process in things outside the automotive world. Pierre said, you got to be like a two-year-old. You got to ask why. And, you know, you've got to ask why. Why are we putting passenger-rated tires, which only have a certain load capacity, on a vehicle that has a GVW of somewhere between 8 and, I don't know, 10,000 pounds, 12,000 pounds, depending on the vehicle? Makes no sense.
Right.
Makes absolutely no sense.
And then you start looking at prices and the extra load or E-load or whatever. Only $100 to $200 a set more.
Right.
I mean, that's a big deal.
Right. And the safety factor. One of the things, you know, I'll tell you a quick story, just you and me, right? So I'm having dinner with my two other kids the other night, and we were talking about something, and one of them brought up the third little Ananian who wasn't there, and they said, you know, Dad, she said the other day she told us that you're actually pretty smart. She just doesn't want to tell you because you just know things about life. You know, as you get older, your kids kind of tell you that you're smarter than they want to let on.
Right.
And one of the things I always say is the road is a very unforgiving place, and you only have to learn this lesson once. Try sitting on the side of the road with a bad tire, a flat tire, a blown out tire, and you could have saved yourself that aggravation by spending the extra $100 or the extra $200. What's your safety? What's your time worth? And we've lost sight of that. It's not that we are losing. We've lost sight of that.
And along with that, next sentence behind that is you got that $100 in your pocket. It does you no good now.
Right. That's right. And, you know, it's one of the biggest fears I have of getting stuck on the side of the road isn't when is somebody going to come and get me? Will I still be alive when they do? Because the way these people drive today, the shoulder's like the sixth lane. You know, on a four-lane highway, you got two shoulders. It's like the sixth lane, depending upon which side you're on. So
I drove semis for 15 years. I've seen some stuff.
Yeah. You've been around, right? Tim,
right.
I appreciate the comments and the conversation, brother. It sounds like we grew
up
in the same generation, and I'm proud to count you among the Car Doctor Nation. So,
enjoy your show. I learned a lot.
Thank you, sir. You take good care. You have a good rest of the weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. I'm coming back right after this.
Well, this car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic. Why, it's greased lightning.
Hey, welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, rolling along. By the way, if you're looking for it, tune in iHeart, iTunes, all places to podcast. Click subscribe when you podcast us, and that way you automatic delivery, and drives our numbers up. And we're seeing it again, increase in numbers again. I don't know where it's going, but like they said on the Little Rascals, where are you going, Stymie? I don't know, but I'm on my way. Whew. Anyway, let's get over and talk to Charlie, Atlanta, Georgia, and see what's going on with this Ford EcoBoost. Charlie, how's things down Atlanta way? How's that highway? You guys have some problems down there, no?
Oh, there's some problems down here, but I'm nowhere near that.
Yeah,
so
thank,
I'm all set.
Thank God for that. So it won't matter if the car gets good fuel economy or not. I understand there's lots of traffic jams down around that neck of the woods.
So, they have their share.
Yeah. So what can I do for you, sir?
Well, a friend of mine up in Maine bought a Ford pickup, had 50,000 miles on it probably 2 years ago, maybe three. And he's put another 50 on it, and he told me within the last year, when he first got it, he was getting 22 miles to the gallon. He's down to 17 now, and he takes care of it. He doesn't abuse it. He maintains it well, and I was listening to your show. I drive around the country, and I can't remember exactly where I was, but you was talking to a couple of gentlemen about a problem, some kind of a cleaning that had something that had to be cleaned or a filtering system or something. Possibly on these EcoBoosts, and I just could not remember what it was, so I thought I'd call in again and see if you could remember what that was. Bring me up to date.
Are we talking about Berryman fuel system cleaning product?
I think maybe. Is
that what we were talking about carbon deposits in the engine and GDI systems and
yes.
the way that they build up carbon, because that's what an EcoBoost system is?
Yeah,
gasoline direct engine. Yeah, carbon is a huge issue in today's engines, and it's kind of like the quiet killer. You don't even know it's there, and then all of a sudden you see a drop off in fuel economy, or performance, or both, or maybe it just doesn't idle as smooth. And in a lot of cases, it's carbon deposits. And you know, you'll look at history on the vehicle, and you'll find that the person has done all the proper maintenance. Their maintenance is in step. They've followed it to a T, and maybe they've gone a little bit overboard in terms of manufacturer's recommended maintenance. And then all of a sudden you wake up one day and it's got a little shudder to it or a little shake, and it's not as smooth or as peppy as it once was. It's, in a lot of cases, it can be traced back to carbon. Carbon deposit maintenance, I guess that's the right way to do it, or fuel system maintenance is the right way to say it, is just got to become part of the everyday. You know, it's got to become part of our culture, like Twitter and Instagram and listening to the Car Doctor. It's just that important.
Right.
You know, so that's what I think we were talking about. And the issue with GDI engines is that the injector sprays right into the combustion chamber. It bypasses,
uh-huh.
It bypasses the intake. So now the problem becomes that, you know, you're going to attack it. One of the best ways to attack it is you can, you know, do a through the rail injection cleaning and clean the system that way, but you're not going to get, you know, the intake valves, you're not going to get the intake runner. So you want to start thinking about doing maintenance to help the vehicle burn cleaner on a regular basis, and one of that is a tank additive. And I think what we were talking about that day was Berryman, berrymanproducts.com, and their Hess technology and what that can do. And, you know, we've seen a lot of good results with that. And that's probably where I would start. That's easy enough for you to do or your friend to do. If they have an O'Reilly Auto Parts near them, get over to an O'Reilly Auto Parts. I know they carry Berryman fuel products, and pick up a can of the Berryman fuel tank in tank cleaner and pour it in and go. And
what was that again, so I can write that down?
You're looking for Berryman, Berryman, Berryman fuel system products.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, like I said, you can find it at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If you get out to O'ReillyAuto.com, you'll see it listed there. And, you know, I'm sure he's got an O'Reilly Auto Parts near him, and we can kind of go from there. At least it takes some of the simple things off the list. You know, one of the other things that you may want to think about as a potential, you know, gee, it's not getting the fuel economy it once did, if we were having a conversation beyond carbon, because clearly that's not the only thing that can cause an engine to lose fuel economy. But on a vehicle with no fault codes, poor fuel economy, you know, we start thinking about tire pressure or tires properly inflated. Chances are they are in your friend's case. But the other thing we want to think about is, do we have a marginal thermostat? You know, an engine thermostat can be off by as little as 6 degrees and make all the difference in the world in terms of fuel economy. And that's why we start talking about things like, you know, a Stant thermostat. We like Stant as a direct replacement thermostat. It meets OE specifications. Stant makes a lot of the original equipment thermostats in this country. And they've got some of the better ideas as far as heat motors are concerned. But replacing your thermostat on a regular basis or every couple of years, 3-4 years now, isn't the worst idea either. I'll tell you a funny story. We put a thermostat. We had to change a thermostat in a Chevy Trailblazer not too long ago. And she had the original stat in it. Didn't get a check engine light, but had poor heat output. It was one of those right on the border of, you know, it's good, but it's not great type of thing. Put a Stant in it and changed the thermostat, put it back together. She came in this week and she's telling me now she's, can I say this on radio, Tom? She's getting hot flashes because the thermostat, the car's got such good heat that she's getting overheated all the time. I'm not sure what she meant by that, but that was the issue. So, you know, when I think Stant, I think, we're good. So more information at Stant.com. But that's a true story, Charlie. No lie.
Okay.
So, but those two things I would look at, Berryman and Stant, and see what that's all about. All right.
All right. Thank you very much. I do appreciate your time.
You're very welcome, sir, and thanks for listening to us as you drive around this great country of ours. We appreciate it very much. You take good care. Wow. You know, it's funny. You don't think this radio show is reaching anybody, and then somebody calls up and says, well, I drive around the country and I listen to you, and you wonder, really, where is the show? How far out does it really go? I was trying to explain that to somebody this week, and I just never know. I know where I am most of the time, and I know where I'll be when I get back from this break. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, taking you in and out of the danger zone here, repairing cars this afternoon at 855-560-9900. Let's get over and talk to Anthony, Freehold, New Jersey, 96 Ford F-250, and some questions about trouble codes. Anthony, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. What's going on?
Thank you, Ron. How you
doing? Yes, sir. Good. What's cooking?
It's my father's truck. It's a 96 Ford F-250, 4.9 inline six, two-wheel drive.
Right.
And I just did a head gasket job on it about 3 months ago. Everything went well. But these codes were present before, and they're still present after. They're the P0171 and the P0174 lean on both banks.
Right. This car has this vehicle has two oxygen sensors, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where they get because understand 171 is lean bank one, 174 is lean bank two, and you say to yourself, well, it's a straight six. How do we get two banks? We got to have 202s in order to do that upstream before the cats. So why did you do a head gasket? Just out of curiosity.
It has 3 burnt intake valves that were leaking. I did a compression test and a leak down test, and he was having poor acceleration and was you know, just wasn't riding right. So I did those tests and saw those problems and rebuilt the head and threw it on there.
Okay.
And it's running great now.
So now it runs good. You just have this trouble code.
Exactly. And the past inspection, so.
Right. So have you looked at fuel trim?
Yeah. I viewed the fuel trim. I checked both with my scan tool, checked both oxygen sensors. Both seem to be reading correctly. We're, you know, bouncing back and forth. The fuel trim, the thing that gets me is it seems that, let's say I just start the truck and I'll watch fuel trim. I won't touch the accelerator or anything, just start it. And the fuel trim actually looks pretty good. Sometimes it'll hover around 4 to 5, you know, maybe 6. It might start slowly creeping its way up.
Now, this is short-term or long-term?
Short-term.
Okay.
The long-term is pegged out at 25 on both banks.
All right. So keep in mind, now what you're saying is we've got long-term of 25 mm-hmm. plus that 4% short-term. So you've got almost 30% fuel trim.
Okay.
All right, understand that. For every long-term is at zero, short-term is at zero. Long-term moves the, think of a pegboard, all right? Long-term moves the peg one hole over, okay? So now you're one plus whatever short-term is. So you're one long-term plus 4 short-term,
oh,
two
okay.
long-term. So it's you have to look at total fuel trim to decide. Short-term is what's going on right now, this instant. Long term, somewhere along the way, that short term climbs up enough that it moves the peg. Always remember that. All right. So you've really got almost a total fuel trim on each bank of 30%, which is excessive.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just think of it like this then. If you start driving down the road, you know, 30, 35 miles an hour, where does short term go?
Perfect. Right to zero.
Right to zero. Did you reset cam? Did you reset the keep alive memory when you did the
no
head gasket? What kind of scan tool do you have?
I just use my cell phone with a Bluetooth dongle.
Yeah, you know. Okay, so you're using a generic OBD2.
Yeah, I can only clear the trouble codes as far as like bidirectionalism. I can back and forth with that.
Can you watch fuel trim on data stream?
Yes. Yeah, I can graph it and watch it. Yeah.
So let's do this, all right? Let's see if this works. Engine off, disconnect both battery cables, unless you tell me you did this. Tie both battery cables together for 10 minutes.
Okay.
All right? Just touch them together. Use a jumper wire. If you can put build a jumper wire. If you can get I guess you can't get the Radio Shack anymore. They don't exist. But back when they did, if you could find a 10-ohm, 1-watt resistor and make a 10-ohm, 1-watt wire so that we don't shock the computer as we drain it down. Let's bleed down the memory. All right.
Okay.
You may still have to do a cam reset because this could be a case that the fuel trim was affected by the valves that were burnt. You know, the reason you did the head, or there could be a secondary problem here. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I've checked for vacuum leaks like you wouldn't believe with a little propane. You know, watching the trims. I mean, I've gone through all the. You know, it's got a lot of hoses, all those cheap little chintzy plastic hoses.
Right. How does the brake pedal feel?
Brake pedal's nice and strong. It does feel good.
The booster. You don't think the booster's leaking?
I was watching the trim. I disconnected the line from the booster and I plugged it
right
just temporarily, and it didn't bring my fuel trims back down.
Okay.
The short term, where I really noticed what happens is around like I said, if I start it up, a lot of times it'll be at a good level. But if I go take that 35 mile an hour drive for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever it is, and I'm watching the fuel trims, they're perfect. Once I stop the car, let's say a red light, both short terms jump up to like 25.
Okay.
After that drive.
Okay. So you do see a rise, and that's the moment when it gets triggered. So something is, we've got an intermittent, we've got an intermittent vacuum leak here. How about, have you gone through the charcoal canister? You know, the vents, the EVAP vent system.
I mean, as far as like putting propane by it and trying to get a leak from there, that's really all I've been able, that's the testing.
How about disconnecting it? You don't need that to run the car. We know you're going to set a fault code. Who cares?
Yeah.
You can always clear it. But how about just trying to eliminate what you can't be? What you can't see.
Okay.
Or what you don't need connected to drive the car. You know, back in the day, if this had a vacuum modulator on the trans, we'd start to think about a split in the vacuum line down there. But I don't think it did in 96. I think this is an E4OD trans.
Yeah, there's no vacuum I run in the modulator.
Yeah. So, you know, let's start to think a little outside the box. We've got to make this a base engine. We've got to start to think, you know, just back to basics. If you've got propane, how are you shooting the propane in there?
I have about a 3-foot rubber line with a brake hose on the end.
Right, a pinched metal tube.
A brake line, a steel brake line.
Yeah, steel brake line. And you pinched it down so you can, like, pinpoint it?
Yeah, no, I didn't. It's just like the open orifice of the brake line.
Now, do this. You know, walk over to a vise and, you know, peen the end of the brake line. Like, I actually made mine into a V, so it's a little more, and I just opened one corner of it. But just make a little tiny orifice. You know, because if you make it a flood, it's going to come out in too much force. If you stream it down and sharpen the point, so to speak, so it's just a little tiny, like the eye of a needle, it's a little more accurate, and you might be able to pin something down. You know, I don't think it's going to be an intake leak because you sound pretty competent, and I can't imagine that you would take it apart and put it back together and, you know, not tighten something.
And to be both banks, right?
Right, yeah. You know, and it is both banks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but yeah, watching the scanner, both banks, definitely.
Yeah. Now, the other question I've got is, do you have a way to disable which PIDs show up on your scan tool at any one given time?
Can you, like, which ones I can graph?
Yeah. Okay. I would graph long-term, short-term, both banks, and engine RPM and load, if I have a choice, because the less you graph, the faster you're going to get a response rate.
Okay.
All right. And
I had a question too. I saw, what about the EGR valve? Could that be causing the problem? And they had that DPFE sensor I heard that can be problem.
DPFE.
But I tested it with a multimeter and it looked okay.
Well, I don't see how the DPFE would do it, and you should set a fault code. But the EGR could be leaking around the stem, and that can surely cause it. So why don't we just bypass it?
Just disconnect it.
Not disconnect it.
Oh.
If you disconnect it, the valve is still going to be mechanically attached to the engine. Take the valve off and, you know, go have a Coke and cut the bottom of the can out and put that as a plate across the EGR temporarily and make a gasket, make a seal.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
And just block it. I mean, you're going to start setting fault codes for EGR and EVAP and so on and so forth. You want to get this thing down to as basic an engine as you can so that you have less to think about and less systems to deal with.
Okay.
All right? Like I said, none of those is going to cause a problem that's going to keep you on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. You know, for the sake of diagnosis, that's what we would do.
Okay.
All right, sir. You let me know what happens.
Sounds great.
All right, Anthony. Thank you very much. Good luck to you, and keep me posted. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Just like a picture, she was laying there. Hey, welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor at 855-560-9900. More information at cardoctorshow.com, as well as podcasting. Also podcasting, if you click subscribe, it helps us at TuneIn, iHeart, and iTunes. And we're glad to count you among us, and we appreciate all your podcasting efforts and the way you help us keep this radio show going. Let's get over to Catherine. I think that's in South Carolina with a 16 Toyota Corolla. Catherine, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help? Yes, ma'am.
Hey.
Hi.
My car was in a hailstorm a couple of weeks ago for about 25 minutes. Ooh. Hail poured down on my car.
Ooh.
And then I drove and I managed to catch up with the storm. So it sat through it again. And so now my car looks like a golf ball.
Mm.
And I was wondering what the best way to repair it is.
Well,
my insurance company. I'm sorry?
Yeah. Go ahead. I was going to ask about your insurance company. What'd they say?
Well, they gave me an estimate, and they had it down for body repair work, that they'd be replacing different pieces of my car. And obviously, the quote was way low, and they're going to have to talk to the repair shop either way to actually cover the damage. But they said they'd cover it. But I didn't know if it was better to replace the pieces of my car because it's a 2016 model, or if I should go the route of trying to get, like, the paintless dent removal, where they can just pop the dents out.
The paintless dent removal stuff. No, I understand what you're doing. Yeah, we use that at the shop from time to time for people. We've got a guy that comes in. You know, when I talk to Clyde, he says it really depends on the situation. And my experience is I watch him do it, and those guys are artists. It just depends on how bad it is. You know, and is there any paintwork involved? I'm imagining a 16 Toyota Corolla that looks like a golf ball, and I'm thinking panel replacement is probably the better way to go. You know, here's my concern. My concern is the insurance company going to replace the body panels with offshore pieces or real Toyota parts?
That's a good question.
I'm not sure. Yeah, and that's okay. I have to talk in New Jersey contractual language. An insurance company in New Jersey, and I'm pretty sure it's the same in South Carolina, but I say it like this to be accurate. An insurance company in New Jersey, that is a binding contract. You buy insurance in New Jersey, it's a contract between you and the insurance provider that they have to restore the vehicle to pre-accident, or in your case, pre-hailstorm condition. All right?
Right.
So that definition, and I know what's gone through the courts up here, is that, you know, people have said, well, pre-accident condition would be to use Toyota, Ford, Chevrolet, and so on parts, not, you know, a CAP-certified fender, a CAP-certified hood, which is the aftermarket offshore stuff. Now, some of that stuff is good, and, you know, some of it has its place. If this was a 2006 Toyota Corolla, yeah, put an aftermarket fender on it. Who cares? You know, what are you going to get out of the car? Another 5 years, 4 years?
Right.
You know, you should be fine. And I can understand the cost factor because, you know, on an older car, if you use an original equipment part, the replacement pieces get to be so expensive. I've seen cars be totaled for some of the goofiest things in the world. We've got an 07 Camry in the shop right now. The young man slid into the curb. And, you know, if it goes through insurance, the car's worth $7,000. If it goes through insurance, it's about a $4,500 hit. The car will probably get totaled because
right.
It's a curb slide and it's approaching 50% of value. So in your case, I would ask them, are we using, you know, and you want to insist on this, Catherine. And I think it's your right. You're paying the insurance. And if they're telling you that hailstone damage is covered, then the conversation has to go to pre-accident condition, right? That means I want Toyota parts. I want a Toyota hood. I want a Toyota deck lid. And, you know, they'll probably, I don't know what they'll do for the roof. There you might do paintless dent removal. But, you know, you're going to talk about taking the headliner out of the car. You know, it just watch them. I could almost see this car, I hate to say it, I could almost see this car getting totaled. You know, all of a sudden this becomes $5,000-$6,000.
Well, I was going to say, I actually went and I've had two different quotes, and the guy, the repair shop, said it would be almost $7,000.
There you go. Yeah, and I haven't even seen the car yet.
Right.
And you know, what'd you pay for the car new? Well, let's see. You had to pay $25,000 for the car.
$20,000.
Okay, so now it's worth $15,000.
Right.
So $15,000. They're saying it's $7,000. They haven't gotten started. If that car goes to $9,000. They'll total it. I bet you. Just be aware. Just watch. All right?
Okay.
Just watch. But, you know, it's a good conversation if you've got a Dutch uncle insurance broker that you can sit and talk to somebody.
Okay.
You know, this is that moment where you got to call in that favor and say, hey, I want OE parts, and I want to be kept aware of if this car gets totaled, do I have the option of buying it back and fixing it myself? And that can work out in your favor if you do it right.
Okay.
All right?
Awesome. Okay.
Good luck
to
you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you. Yeah, that's a tough spot to be in. That's hailstone, you know, Hail Mary. So, anyway, 855-560-9900. I almost have a personality today, or not. I'll be back right after this.
Anything can happen.
I knew you just had to get that last word in, the two of you. They've been very quiet today, folks. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Let's get right into it. Let's try and squeeze this last call in. Ron from Vernon, Connecticut. Yes, Ron, how can I help?
Hi. Well, I'll make it real quick. I could fix anything years ago. You know, I thought I could fix this, but my ignition switch. You know, you got to push it. It's on a 2012 Ford Escape.
Right.
When I got it new, it was fine. But now, after the warranty went out, I push it. I got to push it in and then turn it on. If you just turn it on, it won't do anything. You got to push it in. And, you know, I was going to take it apart and look at it. I'm not much for locks. I mean, I used to fix everything in the car when they used to put the engines in the right way. Now they put them sideways.
Right.
I don't even look at a car no more.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But,
right.
I brought it to the dealer, and he wants $480 to put a new switch in. But it seems to me I could take it apart somehow.
Well, you know why he wants $500 to take the switch apart or to put a new switch in? Because there's probably, I believe there's going to be programming involved that you can't do without a module, without a scan tool. So you're sort of, listen, this is the price of cars. People ask me how soon before the technology going to change. I don't know. It's when can we afford it? And that's going to be the real big question. And that's part of the problem. So till next week, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.